Welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I speak with one of Ireland's leading goldsmith and jewellery designers, Nigel O'Reilly. As his pieces now adorn the Marvel Room in Brown Thomas, in our podcast today, we discuss his unlikely beginnings in this industry and how his design is driven by the beauty of each individual stone. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brown Thomas Podcast. Mr. Nigel O'Reilly, welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast.
Thank you, Louise. Thanks for having me.
I think this is a first. I do believe you are the first fellow male person I've had the pleasure of having on the Brown Thomas Podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Just the beginning.
And we have promised we won't go down any GAA Mayo spiral. So let's keep it to the main business. But we're so delighted because your beautiful crafts, your amazing jewellery now features in the Marvel Room, and we are delighted to have you. Tell us about some of the pieces that are in Brown Thomas at the moment.
Thanks, Louise. We have 9 pieces in the Marvel Rooms at the minute, and we're just really excited to be part of it. Like, it's always exciting to go up to Dublin to Brown Thomas, especially when the Marvel Room is open.
It's
just cool. They have just nice stuff there, and to be included in it was a huge honor, really.
I know.
Some of the pieces, again, I find it hard sometimes to talk about the pieces as into where to start. Like, yeah. People ask, which is your favorite piece? And I'm like, but I love them all. That's why I
meant
them.
Which is your favorite child? I know, I bet.
Yeah.
But you put your heart and soul into them. But where do you start then? And we'll talk about some of the pieces, but where do you start? Do you start with the stone, or do you start with an idea of how a piece should look and then take it from there?
It's really a bit of both. Sometimes I'll have the stone and it could be in with me for like a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And me just looking at it, and then it'll kind of hit me where what colors, what design, what feel I need to go with to get the most out of the stone. Because the gemstones I use, I think, are pieces of art in their own right. So in some ways, it needs to almost speak to you to figure out where it needs to go.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound too a bit airy-fairy, but like, no. You have to look at it in a way. When Erwin was my trainer, and he was a gemstone cutter as well. So his gemstones mean an awful lot to me personally. So for me, I feel a great sense of responsibility to do all those stones justice and make sure that they're in rings that, are as special as they should be.
So often a stone could be sitting in your workshop, in your studio for a while, and you know something will come of it, but you have to almost to get to know the piece.
Yeah, you really do, because the thing with a lot of, it would be very easy to just put it in a normal design and like put some stones around it and there you go, nice stone, basic ring, basically. So that isn't what I wanted to do. So when I look at a piece, it takes months just to try and figure out what to do. And like, I suppose since the last few years, I've kind of got more of my style is coming out in my work. And it's a little bit easier in that respect, because I kind of have a vision for a few different pieces as I'm working on them. So I'm working on one piece at the minute, but I automatically have another, let's say, 2 in my head that are inspired from making these 2 pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of some of the pieces then, if somebody is to walk into the Marvel Room, well, let's talk about, there's one beautiful piece that has featured in the imagery for the Marvel Room. Tell me a little bit about that, the name of it and how it came alive.
Yeah, that's the orb ring. That one was an interesting one, really. So I had the pearl. It was part of Erwin's private collection. So unfortunately, Erwin has passed away. He passed away in 2016.
Yeah.
But he had a box of gemstones and pearls that were completely, not for sale. They were just his. And his wife let me have access to them. So he's kind of like, she was like, he wouldn't want to see them just left in a safe. So you should give them some life.
Okay.
And he had this absolutely gorgeous 14 millimeter golden South Sea pearl. And it just, the color and the luster of it is just absolutely amazing. So I'm very inspired by space and David Bowie and music and things like that. So I was just, looking at it looked like a planet, and I wanted to almost create a solar system around that and have different layers So the pearl is held inside a 18 karat gold sphere, and then that is all drilled out, and underneath it, it's set with pink diamonds. And then outside that, then it's held inside all this 18 karat rose gold mesh work. Wow. With pink diamonds up on the top. So what I want to do is, when people wear my work, is that every angle looks different. Every time they put it on, they see something different. There's always something different going on in the piece for you. And I like to put, let's say, again, it sounds crazy, but like setting pink diamonds underneath the pearl, where yeah. only the wearer knows it's there. But I think that's wow. hugely important.
That's because, luxury, isn't it? You know,
yeah, it's yeah. the secret that, yeah. that you know it's there and nobody else does. And I just like that. I think it gives people a little bit of confidence. And mm-hmm. every angle that somebody else looks at the ring is different to what you see the ring, you know. So yeah. it's kind of just adding more dimensions to the piece.
The orb just works so well. You know, the windows for Brown Thomas have been revealed, the Christmas windows, and it's all about outer space. So it's just so perfect that this piece can fit in the Marvel room along yeah. with eight other outstanding pieces. I talked to you about them all day. They really are special. But you've mentioned two men that I want to talk to you about: Erwin, your mentor, and David Bowie. Because I know that, you know, music and the landscape, there's so many things that inspire you. So I want to get to all of those. But first thing, in terms of your business and in terms of what you created, it requires two things: talent and training. And your talent is, I mean, it's evident for anybody who can see you're so immensely talented at what you do. Tell me about your training for the craft and how that began.
Well, where do I start? It's kind of funny because technically I've no qualifications in jewelry whatsoever.
Yeah, okay.
When I left school, so I'm severely dyslexic, so school wasn't always that fun. Like, it was okay. fine, and I got through it. I got through it because I went to a school that had lots of practical subjects like metalwork, woodwork,
yeah,
and construction studies, you know, things like that, that I was able to, you know, concentrate my skills at that. Mm-hmm. But I got an apprenticeship as soon as I left school. I didn't want to go to college. I just, the idea of going to a college setting, more paperwork, stuff like that, yeah. just kind of made me feel a bit ill. So I got an apprenticeship as a precision engineer, and I did that for I did that for 5 years. But in my last year, I was in Galway, and I was out, a night out. In mm-hmm. Cuba, if anybody remembers Cuba.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do.
Good times upstairs.
Memories
in Cuba.
And some lack of memories.
Yeah, some vague recollections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I loved about upstairs in Cuba is played all the music that I liked, which leads into my inspiration now to make these jewelry. But I met a girl in Cuba, and she was an art student, and we started going out, and to try and impress this new girl, I started making up rings when I should have been working, making medical devices. Instead, I was making
rings. Injection molds, which are so, yeah. I mean, so intricate.
Yeah, and it was all for vascular surgery and yeah. things like that. So again, the apprenticeship isn't where I ended up, but like, it's what taught me incredible discipline. And the girl.
And the girl.
And that's Tracy, by the way. That's my wife.
Yeah, your wife. Her. Yeah. She's outstandingly talented herself as an artist. She's an amazing artist too. So you have to work hard to impress somebody yeah. as artistic as her, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. So I yeah. still think I am trying to impress her with everything.
But great to be.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was like, "These are class. You should have even thought about going into jewelry." And I hadn't. Like, I don't come from a jewelry background. My mum's a teacher. My dad's a farmer. I have all brothers. There was literally no jewelry in the house.
Yeah.
But I just started to look into it. And there was a course run by the Crafts Council in Kilkenny. And they take on 12 people every 2 years. It was the in-between year. So I had a year to get my portfolio together. So I made a makeshift bench in a spare room and made some very primitive pieces.
Yeah,
but I got in. Jane Houston just took me on. She's the first one to give me my chance in jewelry. So, and then I just became obsessed with jewelry since then.
And it made sense for you then, right? You know, compared to yeah. what you've been doing before. Well, I think it's so inspiring that, you know,
now it's so clear that there is a pathway for somebody who is not academically comfortable. You know, you found school hard, but look now, you know, we can break away from that traditional route. And I think that's really inspiring for anybody who might be listening to that, who might have kids who are struggling. There's always a way. But also, did you keep the beautiful rings you first made? Are they somewhere?
They are actually one of the pieces that I think got me into the course. I met it and I combined timber and different kind of metals, and it moves. Actually, the pendant moves inside itself.
Okay.
And I have it still. I leave it on top of my microscope, so it's there every day, so I can see where I came
started,
from.
Where you began. So from there, then you moved on. I mean, so you did that course and you found your true passion. Where did Erwin Springbrunn, who we've mentioned, where did he come into your story?
Yeah, it was a strange one. Jane told us, we're like, oh, next week we're going to visit this goldsmith. He's an amazing craftsperson. He's a silversmith. He's a gemstone cutter. And I'm like, wow, this is cool. I can't wait, you know? Yeah. And I was like, where are we going? London? Paris? And she's like, no, we're going to Roscommon.
Love it. The capital of gems in Ireland.
Yeah. I was a bit skeptical. I was like, oh God, this is going to be some crafty guy now, you know? And we all piled into a bus and got down. I had to give them directions once we went past that loan, because nobody had any idea where they were at that point. Yeah. We got to Roscommon and we turned off a by road into his house, and it was just like Gandalf walking out. It literally was. He had the half moon glasses, and he got on the bus and he just said, welcome, colleagues. And it always kind of gets me in the throat when I hear him talk about that, because it was just so nice to have somebody call us colleagues as opposed to like just, you know, students or
you're
in here. And he was just an amazing, amazing guy. And I couldn't believe that he lived 40 minutes away from where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So like I was working in Kilkenny. So at that point, after the course, I was working with Rudolf Helsel, who was a huge influence on my career as well. So I'd work with him during the week, and then I'd drive down and spend the weekends with Erwin.
Wow.
Working different things and talking about gemstones. A lot of the stuff he taught me, I suppose, the skills are one thing, but his approach to the industry and the approach to life has stuck with me more. Like I wouldn't have thought it possible to set up a high-end jewellery business in the west of Ireland, because everybody tells you can't do it, and oh, you can't do it in Mayo. Or when I moved back from, again, I'm getting ahead of myself, but me and Tracy moved to Sweden just after we got married, because I wanted to learn different more modern techniques. And it was always in my head though that we could come back to Mayo, but when I was telling people, they thought I was absolutely crazy, and you have to be in Dublin at least, you know. But this is the middle of the recession, and I was like, no, I'm definitely going to do it in Mayo.
I know. And now even the world is even smaller now. You know, I mean, it's so easy for you. You've got Knock on your doorstep. You can jet here, there, and anywhere you need to. You know, and I think that's really important for Mayo. We're very proud of you in Mayo. And I think it's good that it's not just your typical, you know, your typical industries in rural Ireland, more rural Ireland. You know, it's funny, my family are engineers too, my dad and my brothers, and they started, well, he would have started like you with precision engineering and injection molds and stainless steel, but alas, that is where the similarities end, and there are no gems, you know, just falling loosely around the house. But but it's amazing. So I love that you said before as well, your mom, you know, it was just like her engagement ring and her wedding ring, there was no jewelry, you know. How has that collection grown for you, dear?
It's definitely grown, thankfully.
Good.
I definitely owe her for all the hard shape I put her through with dyslexia and asthma and all the bad haircuts.
I know. So. Well, the typical trials of parenting, you know yourself now.
Yeah.
And what you do now is an age-old craft, Nigel. How has technology changed during your tenure? Like what processes are you employing now that perhaps you mightn't have, you know, 10 years ago or so?
Yeah, it's changing all the time, and that's I suppose that's why I went to Stockholm, because working with Erwin and Rudolf was absolutely amazing, and they were the core of everything I do still, because you have to know the core skills before you can develop them into mm-hmm. something else. But there was new techniques and using, because I had the engineering background, I could see how you could actually use modern technology to push your designs forward. Like using laser welders means that you can work on really precious stones and then like still melt and work the metal while there's still the stones in the piece. Like there's just so much you can use. And now with 3D printing and CAD design and stuff like that, again, I'm able to use all the engineering skills to just push the designs forward. And that's my goal. Like my goal is to make the best possible piece of jewelry. Okay.
Yeah.
And to me, it's how you, it doesn't matter how you get there as long as the end result is as good as possible. Because there's people using technology to try and cheat and make things quicker. And that actually, the piece looks like rubbish, you know? Okay. So it's kind of, I have no problems with people using technology as long as the end goal is
enhance
the piece as best as possible.
Yeah. You know? And so let's take the orb, come back to the orb, for example, which is the beautiful piece that's in the Marble Rooms. How long did that take you? How many of you were involved in that piece, for an example?
Well, we've got three people on the bench and we've got two people in the behind the scenes working. Paperwork and all the stuff that I am terrible at.
Because it's a global business now, so you need...
Yeah, you do. Yeah, it's the amount of just organizing, like being in the Marvel Rooms is one thing. And then like at the end of November, we're going to go for a 2-week solo show in LA in Sotheby's.
Wow.
So it's like the amount of paperwork and stuff that has to be done even to get out there. Is
and I would imagine
crazy.
Transporting and insurance for your pieces, like these are all...
Insurance and documenting everything. The problem I have is when I'm working, I just make the piece and then I don't know what goes into it. I forget the amount of stones that have got into it. So that has been difficult for me over the last while to try and document everything I'm doing. So look, we have Lynn here in the office who's doing absolutely amazing work to get all that. But to answer your question,
come back to the orb. Yeah, of course.
The orb, it's very difficult to put a time on it because I'm always working on different aspects but in different times. So like you could be looking at maybe 3 months to put a piece together like that. You know, it's not solid 3 months, but sometimes you have to design a part, work on it, and then go back. It's not working right. You know, there's a lot. So I would say probably about 3 months
would
go into some time like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And talking about, you know, how things have, you know, soared for you internationally and that kind of happened, you know, during the pandemic when everything else was shutting down, you know, you were, you know, you had a display in Sotheby's and, you know, things have really, things are really ramping up, you know, a hefty pace in terms of your recognition. You know, Julianne Moore has worn your pieces, our own Saoirse Ronan, you know, there's a real love for your work. How has this been happening, or you know, how do you feel about this and the growth?
I feel amazing.
Yeah, of course. ridiculous question. You're not going to be upset about it.
No, but I do feel it has kind of taken. It's one of those things, and I'm sure you know it in your own career as well, where you're trying and trying and trying for years and years, and next thing, just things start to fall into place.
Yeah,
and it almost looks effortless to the outside as in like this has just happened, but like Sotheby's, you know, I've been talking to those for 5 years, you know.
Yeah.
And when I meet them first, they love the work, but they're kind of like, I don't think you're ready yet, you only have, so you have to keep building up the collection. And I think what people like that are looking for is consistency in your work, you know, that's an evolution in your design, because like I can literally show you from piece to piece where the newest pieces came from has been inspired by the piece that's come before and before and before. So it kind of goes back around. So like it's been 6 to 7 years of pushing the designs I've been working on and then going out to America. Like, you know, I'd be flying back and forth 5 or 6 times a year without getting any results, really. Well,
I know.
Yeah, without getting any, how would you say, monetary results or things like that.
Where
it's just kind of like, but every time I go out there, I'd meet somebody new and they'd introduce me to somebody else. And it's kind of like, it's been but it's all been fun. Like it hasn't been, you know, I get to do what I what I love every day. So.
Yeah. And you have to believe in that too. You know, you have to believe that all of those, just even if it's just one person you meet, you know, they are all adding to something. And also you have to have major belief in what you're doing too. I think that's so important, which you absolutely do. You know, how could you not believe in what's coming out of your workshop? It's beautiful, you know. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's, to me, again, as you're talking about my, like, my reputation is increasing and stuff, that to me isn't important. For me, it's the state of flow you can get into while you're working. That's the most important thing for me. And everything else that goes around with it is incredibly important because it keeps that going.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the work itself, making the piece, because I know an awful lot of designers that like talking about design more than they do actually designing. Do you know what I mean?
I understand so that.
It's and kind of...
How do you feel about being part of a journey or becoming, you know, your pieces becoming heirlooms that live in families for generations? Because that's surely what's happening.
I love it. I love it. I love being part of people's story. Like, and it doesn't always happen, but 90% of the times I become good friends with the people that have my work. Like people would come visit in Mayo, like spend a week in Mayo just to come see the studio and just to come visit us and see what we're doing. I can pour you a story. A customer of mine, I was just texting her last night. Mm-hmm. She lives in Texas now, and she was working in Galway for 2 years, and she wanted a ring to I don't know, be part of her story in Ireland, you know. Mm-hmm. And we worked together on a piece, and when I gave her the piece, she actually started crying and said that she always wanted to have a ring with a beautiful red stone in it when she was younger, and she never thought she'd be able to afford one. But she was able to get it now, and she always felt that when she was younger, she had this ring, it would give her magical powers, you know. And I got a text message off her a couple of weeks after collecting the ring that she had gone for a new position in her job, and she got it. And she said, I had the ring on every day that I went for the interview. It was like, it was the ring that did it.
The ring, you know? The magical powers. That's incredible.
But again,
that's beautiful.
I love that. I love that. I love being part of that. And I love being part of people's story.
Yeah.
Just being part of something like that. It's a privilege, and I don't take it lightly.
It's beautiful. So talk to me about your life then in Castlebar. You've got children, you've got a booming business. Is Tracy still involved in the journey, in the business? I know she's so busy in her own right as an artist.
Yeah, she is still involved, but I'm trying to sack her. I'm trying to push her out.
Good. That's going to really pay off for you at home, I would imagine.
Yeah. No, as you know, Tracy is the backbone of this business. Without her, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. Like, just having her support behind me, and she's the one that's been able to, like, I'm good on the bench, but I just can't do any of the paperwork stuff. And I completely go blank when I even look at a computer screen sometimes. So without her help, fighting for things and being able to push me into the right directions, I wouldn't be here at all. But the flip side of that is that's taking up too much of her time and not her being creative enough in her art, because in my view, she is the most talented one, definitely in this relationship. The benefit of the business growing means that we have more cash flow, which means we can take on more staff. So that's why I'm pushing her out. For her own good.
For her own good. Oh my God, and for all of our good, if we see more art coming from Tracy. And what about your children? Are they shown signs of this artistic gene, or have they booked the trend and are they into the books? How are they coming on?
They definitely are artistic, thankfully. Yeah, well, if they weren't, our oldest son, Tig, is absolutely amazing artist. And during the lockdown, the homeschooling was an absolute nightmare. So we decided we're only fighting here. And what does he love doing? And he loves animation. And he loves stop motion. So we had him his own Instagram page. So he was able to put up all his work, never his image or anything like that, but just his work. And then recently he's got his own YouTube channel going. So if I could plug out for Joe Peg Studios. He'd love a few more
Amazing.
Followers.
Amazing. So, wow. We must check out Joe Peg Studios. But you have two sons, Nigel.
Yes. Davis, who is just turned 8. And he is definitely a budding artist as well. And his obsession with penguins knows no bounds.
That's so
maybe he'll be an Arctic explorer or something like that at some stage.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all. And David's a great name for a Mayo man too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he's born in Strade. So, you know, that's where that's Michael David's from.
But that's fantastic. So tell me what's next? So we're kind of coming to the tail end of the year. The festive season is upon us. What does 2023, 24, what are your plans for the future?
Honestly, Louise, the LA show was so big.
Yeah.
I can't even think past.
You're going to need a holiday after that and after the Marvel rooms and the business
after
of it all.
After the Marvel rooms and Sotheby's, I'm definitely taking a couple of weeks off.
Well, I think you deserve it.
I honestly can't think past it. Like, it's just the two shows are everything I wanted to do. I'm sure I'll figure out what to do.
I'm sure you'll get busy.
But to me, it's just all focused on that. And I have the collection done, but there's always part of me is like, no, I can do a nicer piece. This one will be nicer than the other one, you know. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been such a joy. It's amazing to see your beautiful creations in the Marvel Room, and you know they're there and they are works of art, so even just to see them, but all the better to buy them, I guess. For anybody listening, and you know, it's amazing to see your progress and how your real talent is recognized. So Nigel, thanks for coming on to say hello to us, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.